You know, it's so great and a real treat to get to talk with wonderful authors who have deep connections to Wisconsin. Done that a lot over the past many years. And today's conversation is sure to be a lot of fun. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My guest today, Jacqueline Michard, who is the author of many best-selling books for adults, for young readers and children. Her first novel, The Deep End of the Ocean, was a New York Times bestseller, was the first selection in Oprah's Book Club. She lived for many years in Wisconsin, coming back to the state now to take part in the Writers Institute Conference at the UW-Madison. That's going on later this week. And with us by phone today, Jackie, so good to be able to talk with you again.
How are you, Larry? Long time.
I know. I can't believe it's been, I don't even know how long. It's been a long time. But I'm really glad to be able to talk with you today.
Me too. It's also thrilling to come back to Wisconsin, especially for the 25th anniversary of the Writers Institute, which, having now moved away from Madison, I know what, because, you know, I do a lot of traveling for all my various new hats,
yep.
That it enjoys a really fine reputation as a writer's conference.
And I do want to talk with you about it, and we definitely will be spending some time on it today. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in first. By the way, as you listen in, have you read Jackie's books or read any of her books? Maybe you can tell us about your favorite. Or wonder what it takes to be a successful fiction writer. I think she can share her insights on that as well and answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You've written so many wonderful novels for adults, Jackie, but you've also written several books for young adults recently. What prompted you to write for that audience?
I am just very attracted to the immediacy and the emotional geography of teenagers, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
They don't live lives that are as large as adults' lives. They don't have the long view, but the emotional topography of the things that they go through, the experiences that they have, is just, it's like the Rocky Mountains. and so it's thrilling to be able to look back in one's own mind and participate in that time in which everything, I mean, they live in dog years. You know, a week is a month is a year, and a year is like an era. And I have three teenage daughters myself now, all of whom are big fans of some of the truly amazing and wonderful young adult writing that's going on right now. And I wanted to try it, and I found out I liked it so much.
Oh, is it a lot different to write for young readers?
Not really. Not really, with those few exceptions.
Yeah.
It's really not different in that you do your best writing, you have a great deal of respect for your audience because they are not stupid, and they will catch you as a phony immediately if you're trying to reference things that you as a middle-aged person have no idea about.
Yeah.
They'll catch you right away. But it's not really so different. I thought it would be difficult to get in touch with my 16-year-old self again. But I found out that I had not matured much beyond that age at all. So it was very easy indeed.
Oh, man. What kind of feedback are you getting from the young adult readers?
Well, it has they fall in love with books and characters as though they were real people.
Mm-hmm.
You know this from the success of the Harry Potter series and of Suzanne Collins writing the Hunger Games and so forth. So they have a very immediate response, and it's a very passionate response. So the teen readers either like you or they hate you, And I've also had a really interesting career event based on having started writing young adult books, in that I now am editor-in-chief of my own imprint. That is a young adult, a realistic-only young adult imprint under the aegis of F&W Media that publishes Writer's Digest and a bunch of other publications. But it's a big company. It only has two fiction imprints, Tyrus Books, that's based in Madison, and Merritt Press, which is the press that is my little baby.
Oh, wow. That's got to be, that's a lot of work, but it's got to be kind of fun, too.
It's a ton of work, and it's extremely satisfying in a horrible way, like writing. It's just so much work, and apparently I have really good taste in books, because these some of these novels get much better reviews than my own.
There you go. And we've got Anne from Viroqua coming up here. Anne, I'll get to you in just a minute, but I have to mention, you mentioned your daughters, three teenage daughters. You have nine children.
That I know of, yes.
I
have three sons who are grown, and one lives in Madison, where he's a computer engineer, and one is an actor in New York. One's a chef at a big hotel on Cape Cod, and then I have three teenage daughters and three kids still in elementary school.
That's I think most of us can't even imagine keeping a family that size organized, fed, clothed, getting everybody where they need to be.
That is the hardest part. I now buy the flour, the kind of bag of flour that you need a hand truck to move, because I'm constantly cooking. But because they eat, as my brother was saying last night, that my kids are eating something while they're making something to eat. So they eat constantly. There's no body image. None of them is overweight or anything like that. And there's no body image worries. The girls are right in there chowing down right along with the guys.
But you managed to write your books while doing all this. What? Yeah, you have any secrets there? What do you?
My secrets are my secret is fleeing. When I'm finishing a book or when I'm starting a book, and right now I'm doing both, I'm finishing one and starting another, I usually try to apply for a fellowship somewhere, and that means I have to leave my kids for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Right now I'll be at the Ragdale Foundation in Lake Forest, Illinois, for a few weeks, and then in the fall at Yaddo, which is up in Saratoga Springs, continuing work on a novel that I hope to start while I'm at Ragdale. But I have one almost finished. It just has a couple of defects that I have to do surgery on.
Are they a children's book, adult novel?
No, these are both adult novels.
Ooh, well, I want to ask you about that. But I wondered about what influence having nine children has on the books that you write.
They give me an enormous number of ideas, and they also are, three or four of them particularly are voracious readers who have very good taste. And at various times, they've read parts of my books that I've been struggling with, and either say to me, you don't have to worry about this, or you should really worry about this. This is terrible. And when they say that, I believe them, because they're honest. They're not impressed. And in fact, it's very funny that my most recent book, of which is a young adult book called What We Lost in the Dark, my two of my daughters read it without in manuscript without my name on it, and they loved it. And then when they found out that I had written it, they felt, they, in fact, one of them said to me, "I feel really betrayed."
Oh, my goodness. Well, Ann in Viroqua has been waiting quite a long time. Ann, thanks for waiting. Hi. Appreciate your call.
Hi. I went to the conference last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it kind of difficult. I have an adult novel that is set in Wisconsin. And trying to just break in, it seems like it's all the genres, the children genre, and like the whole having to try to sell it to agents and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, what kind of suggestions would you have for breaking in? And I don't have the MFI in my background, but I feel that the book actually is, I mean, I'm pretty confident that it's good.
Well, you know, I didn't have my own, I didn't do my graduate studies until 2 years ago. I mean, I was at the beginning of my 50s when I started my graduate studies and did all, most, the preponderance of my novel writing before I didn't even major in English. I majored in biology. And so I think that you don't necessarily have to be a trained or at least a schooled writer to be an effective and good writer. As far as breaking in, the truth of the matter is that going to these conferences these days, the more people you know, the more people you know. It just helps to know people and be able to say that, you know, Michael Perry... I met Michael Perry, and he thought that I should, that you were the person who might represent this book. It is really important to have an agent because as the producer of Masterpiece Theater, Rebecca Eaton, I met her in Tucson at the Tucson Book Fair a few, couple weeks ago. And
oh,
she said,
there.
Oh, you were there?
Yeah.
Well, do you remember her saying there are just too many books?
No, but my daughter lives in Tucson. We were down there.
Well, when she, at the author's dinner, she said there are just too many books, in her opinion, in the world. And she's probably right, but the best ones still rise to the top. There's two things I would do. One is I would try to find, before you even approach an agent to represent you, find a good professional editor, and that'll be the best money you ever spend, is having your book edited for content and sense. And
I have done that.
You have done that? And
yes.
Then, and then I would target my book toward the agent who's most likely to represent it, and there's no magic bullet for that except finding the book that's most like yours, even if it has nothing to do with the same subject, and trying to find out what agent represented that book.
Hmm.
Right.
And if that book is receiving, if that agent is still taking new clients.
Hmm. Right. I'm caught between, you know, trying to do it locally, which people mostly like the nice stories like Ben Logan or Michael Perry, and this is a bit more of a darker theme. It's about the late 70s and the death of, you know, a small town. And I don't know. It seems almost like nobody really wants to hear that story.
Oh, I think they do. Most agents are still located in New York or Los Angeles, for better or for worse. And Michael Perry's stories are nationally known. Mm-hmm. Even though they're about a very small town.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. And good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today and catching up with author Jacqueline Michard. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Are you a budding writer? Do you have some questions about how to be published or how... the genres and writing, and or maybe you have a question about the Writers Institute that she's going to be involved in. And also, you might just have a question about one of her books. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have the chance to talk with Jacqueline Mitchard, author of many, many books, including The Deep End of the Ocean. She's been writing for a long time now and has written many adult novels, but also written many young adult novels and children's novels as well. So it's great to have her along. Certainly, if you have a question for her or a comment about her books, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. And you mentioned, Jackie, that you have a degree in biology. I wonder if that had any impact on the main character in your most recent series of young adult books, who has a fatal allergy to sunlight.
It did. I started out the idea of that book, you know, which is about three teenagers who all have this genetic condition called xeroderma pigmentosum, which is literally what you said. If they, that, as one of them describes it, that life is the toaster and they are the toast. If they go out in the sun, even for a short while, it could lead to burns so fatal that melanoma could develop from them. And so I was first thinking about darkness, you know, because I believe that people act differently at night. It isn't just that bad people sleep late, it's that they believe that darkness confers this cloak of invisibility, that they behave differently at night than they do during the day. And I thought, why would these kids be out running wild in northern Minnesota at night if they were not the undead? And so a friend of mine came up with the idea of XP, and then they do these extreme sports. They do things like parkour, which if you've ever seen it on YouTube, would absolutely, I mean, it would turn your hair gray. And free diving, which is diving as far down as you can without a tank, using only the air in your lungs. And so they do all kinds of risky things because they may have short lives. But these books are also a murder mystery, because when you're out at night and peeking into places where you shouldn't be peeking, sometimes you see things that you shouldn't see, and worst of all, sometimes they see you too.
Well, it is really, I think, a rich plot element to play with.
It is. I had a great deal of fun in writing about, it's always interesting to write about someone who's different, who is different in the world, but has the same feelings. You know, my mentor was a great writer called Ray Bradbury.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that the important thing to remember about the Martian Chronicles was, though it took place on Mars, it was the same as if it took place in Winnetka, Illinois.
Yeah.
Because people had the same feelings.
Yeah.
And they worried about the same things. And that is absolutely true.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Marty in Madison has a question for you. Marty, hi.
Hi, thank you. I just joined in, so I apologize if any of this is repetitive. I am interested in writing books to support the work that I do. I'm a Spanish teacher for young children, and I often create my own books on my computer, but they've not been anything that anybody uses other than me. And I wonder if you have advice on how somebody on a very low budget can get into this. It would be picture books, and I would make them bilingual, Spanish and English. But I talked with one publisher, and the cost was just so prohibitive for somebody like me.
Oh, you mustn't pay for it yourself. That's job A, okay? Forget what
okay.
you said, because somebody else has to pay for this. They have to be good enough that when your agent, if you can find an agent who represents instructional children's books, and that's not hard. get Writer's Digest, you know, find kinds of books that are like the kinds of books you want to do, find out who represented them, and then the idea is to find someone who will not only pay you for the content, whether it's a king's ransom or not, you know, it may just be a little bit, but also will handle all the production and distribution of the book. You should not have to, you should not be paying for it. That's the trap of self-publishing. There's two traps of self-publishing that's becoming more, which is becoming more and more popular. One is that nobody, there's no gatekeeper. You can put anything in there, including mistakes, that you want to, and no one's going to stop you. And the other is that it costs you a great deal of money that you may not recoup. You got to keep that
thank
in
you.
Mind.
Yep.
That's
yep.
a great mind shift. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. That, you know, and I could see, I could certainly see a market for that kind of book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the research for finding the market for your books is almost as difficult as creating the books themselves.
Yeah.
If not more so, because most people who write love to write. I'm an exception. I suffer when I'm writing. But most people who write, when I go to these writers' residencies, Larry, people come downstairs at night for dinner and they say, "Oh, my goodness. I was just channeling from the universe. Everybody, you know, all my characters were giving me these wonderful ideas, and I wrote 20,000 words, and I am sitting there quietly eating my green beans with almonds and saying and thinking to myself, if I just let my characters lead, all they would want to do would be to open the Doritos, open the beer, and watch the Blackhawks.
Yeah, and that can't sustain a book, can it?
No.
Mary in Madison, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Jackie. You're a huge hero of mine. I just wanted to ask for the advice that you would give for someone who, you know, has written something but is a little too, doesn't know the next step. Like, is it finding an agent the right step? Is just getting the Writer's Digest and submitting to publishing houses that will actually take an unpublished writer. What would be your advice to someone?
What is this? Is this an adult novel?
Yes, it's a it's actually a collection of short stories.
Okay. So the first thing, again, I would say if you have the means to do this, I would have it professionally edited, because one of the best things, you know, if you went for a job interview, you would not get up that morning and say, "Wow, I'm going to have this job interview. I think I'll wear a Badgers T-shirt. I'm going to pull it from under the bed, and a pair of jeans, and my oldest coat, and I'm not going to bother to do my hair. It's fine the way it is." So you wouldn't do that. You would dress, you might not put on a ball gown, but you would dress up to the degree that you looked as though you're ready for the task at hand. And that's how your manuscript should be. Your manuscript should be ready for the task at hand. An agent does not want to read, an editor does not want to read a book that's filled with typos, or in which, you know, and this happens more than you would imagine, in which the person's name is Olivia for the first half of the book and Alicia for the second half of the book, or in which there are all kinds of mistakes of sense. And that's when I edit books for people, I make sure that everything makes sense, that everything hangs together, that it's immaculate, and I tell people what to do to make it immaculate, and then you go to the, and that's going to cost you some money, and that might be the best money you ever spent, because then when you go to look for the kinds of agents who might handle this kind of fiction or short stories, and a short story collection is a harder sell, then you'll be ready. You'll have something that you can present with pride and say, well, you know, this needs a lot. You don't have to say this needs a lot of work. You can basically say, this is ready to go. This is as best as I can make it.
And you'll learn a lot, I think, too, from an editor.
Oh, I think you learn an enormous amount. People have often said to me, you know, you get these little joke interviews that you do for people, and they say, what's the most intimate relationship you've ever had in your life? And it's definitely with my editor. Because not with my husband or my brother or my best friend, but with my editor who knows exactly the truth about what goes on inside my head.
Ah. So there you
go. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Mary, for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, if you have a question or comment for Jackie Michar. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And you've been giving some great advice. And this writer's conference, writer's workshop, that's coming up, and here I suddenly don't have the exact day right in front of me.
It's next Thursday through Sunday.
It's Thursday through Sunday.
Right, this coming Thursday through Sunday.
And we have it up on my Facebook page, some of the details of it. But from your perspective, tell us about the conference and what people can gain from it.
Well, an enormous amount. People who want to write can gain an enormous amount just in terms of meeting and making connections with writers and editors. I'm going to be there with the hat of an editor. I'm going to be accepting what are called pitches, and they're exactly what they sound like, for people who have written young adult books, realistic young adult books. So I'm going to be accepting pitches and hearing people's ideas for young adult books, and I'm in the position to buy them. And then I'm also going to be talking about why I think realism is the future of young adult writing, rather than more paranormal type thing. That will always be there, but I don't think that that's the coming thing. Of course, then you get to hear these wonderful workshops and lectures and hear from these amazing writers like, Christine DeSmet. And I've read Michael Perry's book, Population 45, more times, and I teach it also. I've read it more times than I've read Wuthering Heights, and Dale Kushner, the poet, has a new novel coming out. So you get to just hear the best in people who are tops in their field, and they're all there. They're not there. I know they're not there because people are paying them thousands of dollars to show up. They're there because they love it, and they want to help other people do it as best they can.
That's a great description. In terms of the pitches, how do you pitch? How should a person be pitching a story?
Well, they say that you should try to do it. They call it elevator pitching. You should be able to tell an editor what your story is about and why it's important in the time it takes to get from the lobby to the floor where you're going. I don't necessarily believe it has to be 25 words or less and begin with what if. Mm-hmm. I have bought books at several writers' conferences, and usually the writer starts out by saying this is the story of Lori, who is a young woman whose family has been lost in an avalanche, and she has to make her way back, you know, something like that. There has to be, and then I figure out whether the problem is sufficiently intriguing to hold up a book. and then maybe ask to see some of the writing. And if I ask to see some of the writing, then you're halfway there.
Oh.
Then you're halfway there. And if I like the writing, you're three-quarters of the way there. And then I would take it to the publishing board at my company, and then you'll be all the way there.
Oh.
So, but these things, they're not trivial. And the way to present them is briefly and cleanly and honestly and without a whole bunch of background about why you wrote it. And people are always saying to me, but I've never written anything before. Mm. And you know something? That helps.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually useful. People want to publish a debut novelist. People want to publish something new. They want to be the one who found, you know, this person and discovered this person. So not being experienced, if you're good at it, not being experienced is not a deficit.
Yeah, could be an advantage in some ways.
It could be.
Russell in Mount Carroll, Illinois has a question. Russ, hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, just wondering if your guest knows about the latest technology that's out there that's available for someone writing from home particularly.
I know quite a bit about technology. I don't know what you mean.
Go ahead.
No, I say go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I don't know what you mean specifically.
Any software, any hardware, anything that's out there available for a person using a laptop or...
Oh, gosh, you know something? The Pages and MS Word, Microsoft Word, are still the best things to write a book on. And here's a secret, and most people aren't going to like it. The publishing world uses Macs,
mm-hmm.
Period.
Yep.
When you get your book back from the publisher and the track changes, you'll get it back electronically and you'll submit it electronically these days, not in a box of manuscript paper because that just isn't done anymore. Most editors and agents only take electronic submissions and they only make electronic track changes to the manuscript. That's usually going to happen on a Mac because if you were designing a game, that would be usually on a PC. But Mac is the standard in publishing. And that's, as far as I know, except for writing screenplays, in which there is a program, a wonderful program called Final Draft, And, you know, in nonfiction, I hear all the time about this program called Bartleby that allows you to just put in all your citations and all your footnotes. But I don't write nonfiction, so I don't know that much about it.
Yeah. Scrivener, that's popular as well?
Scrivener is popular, yes, for nonfiction writers.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed the show.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. The conference itself, I want to get back to that. People can still sign up and come to this conference, right?
There's still room, though. Boy, it's stacking up. I hear from the that it's getting very popular. And especially that this 25th anniversary program is packed with all kinds of terrific people, but as of last night, there still are opportunities to go, and if I were starting out, that was a mistake that I made. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't. People always say, "Oh, you were an overnight success after only 20 years of writing," and it hasn't been. It's only been 17 years. It seems like 1,000 that I wrote my first book.
Yeah.
And so I would have gone to more conferences. I would have met more people. I would have learned whether the kind of writing that I was doing or trying to do had any validity or possibility sooner if I had known that such avenues existed. Of course, the number of those have expanded exponentially over the past decade.
Well, the opportunities there, I mean, to pitch to you or some of the other people who are there, this year there's kind of a small group of what they're calling fireside chats.
Yes. Yeah. And those are very intriguing. I believe Jane Friedman, who's wonderful. Editor and has been in publishing for a long time, is doing one. I don't know about some of the others, but as is true with every time you become or one becomes involved with one of these conferences, the problem you have is that you want to go to see everyone else. You want to go and see because you never stop learning. And I want to go and see all the other writers and editors speak. And so I almost resent the time that I'm spending speaking. So,
and your new book, that you're finishing up, what is your new book about?
Oh, gosh. You know how they say never start a book with the weather? And by that they mean... never start a book by saying it was a dark and stormy night, which is actually a pretty good beginning for a book. This book starts with a tsunami. So I guess you could call that weather, really bad weather. But yeah. it's about a man named Frank Mercy, who is from Spring Green, Wisconsin. Hmm. But he is caught, he and his wife and her family are caught in the Brisbane tsunami, in the Christmas Eve tsunami in Brisbane, in Australia. Oh. And his wife and her family are killed. But as a volunteer firefighter, he ends up finding a little boy who is orphaned by the storm. And the little boy is something. He's not a demon. He's something good. But it becomes clear over time that this little boy is different from any other child, and that for that reason, there are other people who are very interested in either having him or not having him around.
Wow. That sounds great. When is it out?
Well, you know, Larry, I have to finish it first. So the sooner I finish it, the sooner it'll be out, yes.
Jackie, it is always such a great pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much, and I'm sure you're looking forward to your weekend here at the...
I very much am.
Yeah, well, and say hi to that husband of yours, too, from me.
I will, and you say hi to your daughter from him.
Okay. Thanks, Jackie.
Thanks for welcoming me home. Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Jackie Michard. Boy, she sounds like a great new book that she's got out. And you can see her, maybe even talk to her, this weekend, Thursday through Sunday, at the Writer's Workshop. It's the 25th anniversary. It's at the University of Wisconsin. Madison, we have a link to it on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Just go to that page and you're going to find out all of the great information about that conference. There's lots of really cool things going on there. Your sessions for people interested in writing for TV or film, or by agents or writers from the film industry, obviously for those who are interested in writing novels, all kinds of wonderful things going on at that conference. Laurie Shear is the Milwaukee native Marquette University grad who headed to Los Angeles after her studies and worked her way up to producer roles and eventually vice president at Women's Entertainment Network. She's the conference director. Well, Jackie mentioned weather, and I don't know that we call the tsunami exactly a weather thing, but I'll ask the weather guy. One of our weather guys is coming up next, and they'll both be with us to talk about the weather. Steve Ackerman and John Martin coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.